Welcome back. You're on Runtime Radio, and this is Data Nightmare. The algorithmic is political. Believe it or not, there are some news on the mother of all data grabs. Not because anything especially has moved in Italy, immutable mire that it is, but because the EU's Directorate General on Competition has gone WTF on the issue and has sent a letter to the Italian government asking a few uncomfortable questions. First, how was IBM selected among competitors? But from what we know now, there was no selection process. Two, what would be Italy's share in the intellectual property resulting from the analysis of its health data? And we also know that IBM has straight-facedly proposed it be none at all. And three, if other competitors could be granted the same level of access at the same conditions. And please, dear God, that means for free, with no agreed scope and no oversight? Well, I sure hope not. As I have been repeating for the last few months, promising a country's entire trove of health data with no oversight, no tender, no contract, and no economic return is a bit much to go unnoticed, even for rule-dodging experts, as we Italians traditionally are. Also, the DG Comp would very much like to know a little more on those 60 million euros that the agreement promises IBM for, I don't know, for the valiant effort of opening a research centre in a first world country where wages are spectacularly low. Anyway, the Italian government was given 20 days to respond in writing. The request being dated October 31st, that puts the deadline on the 28th of November, that is, today. Prepare the popcorn. In the meanwhile, we have to face the attack of the algo jerks.
You know, if things go on at the rate they're going, and goods flow out at the rate they're flowing, the time isn't very far away. When this will be my typical day. At breakfast time, just after I get up, if there's little on the breakfast setup, for the little I'm served, I'm well repaid by the little that's on the serving maid.
I have the impression that things have been accelerating lately. To be precise, I feel we as a society are careening downhill with no brakes, and anyway, no driver. I feel like the brazenness of the digital world is rich in its charlatanism, up near the limits of the scale.
Algo jerk. Somebody taken by passion for the computer to the point of siding with technology for its own sake. The algo jerk will blindly support anything that appears more technological than the status quo. Usually employed as a programmer, sysadmin, or sometimes even in a managerial capacity, the algo jerk can be spotted because his technical ability, or more often his perception of the scene, far surpasses his awareness of and interest in his own actions, their consequences, and their side effects. The algo jerk is essentially a weaponized nerd. This differentiates him, for instance, from a functional or hierarchical superior with the same, or more often lower, technical ability but full awareness, and that, for this, belongs in the category known as piece of shit.
Personally, I would not be against algo jerks per se. They are fundamentally naive chaps who cannot see beyond their keyboard. They are mostly harmless, so to say, and sometimes fun. There are just two problems. The first is that algojokes are enablers for the pieces of shit out there. And second, for quite a few years now, algojokes have been the breed of informatician preferred by the market, to the point where now it is even cool to be one. Algojokes even get funding for their own startups, for God's sake. Seriously, how do you call a guy whose motto is move fast and break things, and of course all those who worship him as the brightest example to follow? Today, algojokes have been weaponized to do the dirty work as useful idiots for the pieces of shit who pull the strings and reap the earnings. And of course, one day we'll need to talk about how programming culture and ethos have been marginalized and dismantled over the past 20 years, so that a generation of coders who can't see beyond the keyboard and who haven't the slightest ethical concern could be groomed as manpower for dystopia. Where does all this leave us? Well, we are the resistance, and it's about time we made ourselves heard. Here's a headline from a few days ago. It's about revenge porn. Revenge porn, as you may know, is that awful, disgusting practice of posting intimate pictures or videos of a sexual partner on the social networks. It's a really a disgusting practice, and it's almost exclusively used by males against female partners. It draws on the more primitive and savage part of the male self-image, the part that still sees a female as an object that, once used, can only be considered damaged goods. I think revenge porn doesn't even make you a piece of shit. It makes you more of a penis hanger. But let's get back to the piece of news I mentioned. Apparently, the eggheads at Facebook have come up with another earth-shattering idea that demands our attention. Here's from the International Business Times of November 3rd. Facebook wants to help stop revenge porn online, but first it needs your nudes. No, I'm not putting you on. This is a real piece of real news. It's been widely reported, and apparently the feature is being tested in Australia. So let's get clear here. In order to fight revenge porn, Facebook asks its users for their nude pics so that these pics can be fingerprinted and then automatically blocked should anyone try to post them against the user's will. What could go wrong, huh? Let us all stoop in the presence of such geniuses. Oh, by the way, the other idea from these algojokes was to combat fake news by giving them robo-generated negative comments. I kid you not.
Princess Vespa spaceship within range, sir.
Good. Fire a warning shot across her nose.
What's going on?
It's either the 4th of July or someone's trying to kill us!
I don't have to put up with this. I'm rich.
What are you doing?
I'm calling my father. 1-800-DRUIDIA.
Careful, you idiot. I said across her nose, not up it.
Sorry, sir. Doing my best.
Who made that man a gunner?
I did, sir. He's my cousin.
Who is he?
He's an asshole, sir.
I know that. What's his name?
That is his name, sir. Asshole. Major Asshole.
And his cousin?
He's an asshole too, sir. Gunner's mate, first class, Philip Asshole.
How many assholes we got on this ship anyhow?
Yo!
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what they smoke or swallow to come up with such stuff, but surely it's not legal, even in California. Anyway, this tells us what kind of slobs our digital overlords are in the end. But the attack of the Argo jerks does not end here. You see, this kind of thing is what they do when they're left to their own devices, so to say. They are, after all, teenage-brained guys, and they're mostly guys, which tells us a lot, with fingers faster than their brains. They are piecework key punchers. Their evil is an awareness, not malice. The real problem starts when Argo jerks, that are by nature meek and domesticable, are weaponized by some real bastard, by a piece of shit. And then is when horrors like this, like the following, are born. Here's from The Guardian, November 6. Big Brother isn't just watching. Workplace surveillance can track your every move. Well, this one needs a little more pondering. Let's see, there's this company, this talent management company called Crossover. Take note, if you meet them, you've been warned. This talent management company, we were saying, asked itself a tough question that unfortunately will sound familiar to too many managers and CEOs, which is this. How can I be sure my remote workers are not idlers? When I was young, I thought in my innocence that only in Italy, looking busy was more important than getting work done. After all, our managerial culture never evolved past the 1950s. But through the years, I found many examples to the contrary. People who made a career out of prowling the corridors with an open laptop in their hands, force-feeding their PowerPoint deck to innocent passers-by. Others who played solitaire with such vigorous intensity, of course with their back to the wall, to distinguish themselves as toilers to the hawkish eye of the boss, and overtake their colleagues, who were busy doing the toilers' share of work in addition to their own. And again, others who collected overtime and joined porn sites, and thanks to overtime, got promoted. But I'm sure you have your own stories here. So, the terrible problem of remote workers who may really be idling instead of working. Well, in Italy, there is no such problem. If you even try to suggest remote work as a freelancer, you'll see your fee halved. As an employee, you'll see your work share doubled. Hey, you'll work from home, so you'll have plenty of free time, no? But in the States, where remote work means less fixed expenses on office premises, the problem does exist. So, how can the noble CEO make sure the wily remote workers do not mistake their fee for a free handout? Enter Crossover. The company issued laptop will take a screenshot and a picture from front camera every 10 minutes or so. This will be joined with the application telemetry and the keyboard logs and be distilled into a focus score and an intensity score that will be used to gauge your real value. Let me stress that Crossover is not the only company selling this kind of crap. There's an entire harebrained industry that's flourishing. Now, let it sink in. I'll need a minute lest I go ballistic. Okay, where do we start? Let's start from the initial assumption that a remote worker may really be idling rather than working. You see, intellectual work works more or less this way. The better I get at doing something, the less time I need to do it, hence my time earns me more. Or, in a given time, I can do something more difficult, hence my time earns me more. I can even get to the point where I am one of the few capable of doing something, and my time earns me more. But my time is limited. It's the actual resource I'm selling, and my only incentive is that it earns me more. So whoever thinks I can go to the gym on paid time, well, thinks that I am stupid. And if on the other hand I really go take a massage instead of working, we are saying that my client cannot tell the difference from my results, and he should be complimented for his ability to choose people and evaluate results. Entrepreneurs like him need no competition. Let's also consider this idea that an entrepreneur may have an interest in controlling not results, but the time required to reach them. Well, the first thing to say here is that it brings workplace relationships back to the 1800s or so. So much for the rhetoric on knowledge workers and result-based work. According to legend, knowledge workers and entrepreneurs sit at a table and agree on a price for some work. Once an agreement is reached, the knowledge worker can act independently. So far, the legend. In reality, entrepreneurs constantly try to extract more value from the knowledge worker's time. Unfortunately, entrepreneurs and knowledge workers do not act on a level playing field. The entrepreneur has inordinately more contracting power, which makes such usurer practices especially repulsive. It's worth repeating that knowledge workers keep themselves professionally up to date entirely on their own time and dime. So, trying to time squeeze somebody in an intellectual profession is not only morally repulsive, but also profoundly stupid, because the person will retreat into doing whatever he can do the fastest. So, once again, my compliments to the entrepreneur. By insisting on paying peanuts, you are finally employing a monkey. But you see, I could understand. I could understand these thick-skinned capitalists who build empires by squeezing employers and customers. I could understand the pursuit of their own exclusive interest. Get rich and let the world go fuck itself. The truth, though, is far less heroic. People who are into this kind of workplace surveillance are not the thick-skinned alphas that they play. They are just, words fail me, idiots who don't know how to price people's work, and, lacking that, resort to pricing time. Idiots not in a clinical sense, which may constitute a mitigating factor, but in a cipolla sense. People who do damage to others and do not really profit from it. Such people do not deserve the honor of having others who work for them. But reality, though it lacks any sense of decency, has no shortage of irony. Those entrepreneurs will soon find themselves with the employees they deserve. As for me, when I consult, my meter runs only during meetings, that curious work ritual where there's no purpose and no agenda, and where everyone's time is suddenly worthless. The only things my client can negotiate are deadlines and results. all else is off limits. Aha! Some of you may say, but this would change if you were employed, wouldn't it? Well, no, not really. Because you see, work duties are defined, job descriptions are precise, deadlines are set. And since my job is not really laying bricks, evaluating results is the only sensible way to quantify my work. Incidentally, focusing on results is the only sensible way to quantify somebody's work, even if it concerns laying bricks. It's all, you see, it's all effort saved for the boss, who doesn't have to waste his time making sure people look busy. And with that time on his hands, he can do his own job. Managing the bottom line, improving processes, defining strategies. In a nutshell, preparing for the future, while everyone else is busy making the present work. Because that should be his job, no? Everything else is up to somebody else, and if the boss has nothing else to do than lurk, then I would say there's a cost waiting to be cut. The truth is different. The knowledge worker is still a peace worker. This is the wonderful corporate culture of the 21st century. We have to repeat the obvious. If our society really were post-industrial and knowledge-based, then we would have accepted years ago that knowledge production is not linear with respect to time. But it's still not all.
The show must go on, the show must go on, to answer all the clamor for oomph and glamour and so on. To captivate Tom, Dick and Harry, each Matilda, Kate and Carrie, Cleopatra and Newberry puts her show on. Way back in history.
And here's another piece of news. Google censors our Google Docs from the New York Times, October 31st. Google Docs glitched that locked out users underscores privacy concerns. Well, that must be the understatement of the year. So, as it happens, a few Google Docs users were locked out of their own documents for a few hours. Reason? An algorithm had decided the contents of those documents were illegal or in violation of the terms of service. Oh my, oh my. And what on earth do these terms of service say? This, quote, "Our services display some content that is not Google's. This content is the sole responsibility of the entity that makes it available. We may review content to determine whether it is illegal or violates our policies, and we may remove or refuse to display content that we reasonably believe violates our policies or the law. But that does not necessarily mean that we review content, so please don't assume that we do." End quote. Well, this is a particularly convoluted line of thought. Let's see. Your content is your responsibility and yours only. 2. On the other hand, we may decide it's illegal and remove it or deny you access to it. And 3. But this does not mean that we will, so don't count on our reviewing unless we actually do it. what can I say? Google independently decides whether some content violates the law. How odd. I seem to remember it took a judge for that. I know. It's all written in the terms of service. Like it or leave it, blah, 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 blah. I will not argue. Let's just stick to the practical. Do these terms sound any reasonable to you? Here we have a private entity that, for all we know, may even be in a conflict of interest that arrogates to itself the right to enforce the law regarding the supposed legality of content that you produced and for which you alone are held responsible. Surely, something that can be denied to me by another private entity without any legal process is a curious definition of property. We've all heard how there is no cloud, only someone else's disk, right? That's true. Okay, so whose is my document when it sits on someone else's disk? How dependable is a service that claims the right to decide whether what I write violates the law? And let's all just ignore what may happen to commercial information stored in the cloud, because you're not storing that kind of content in the cloud, do you? Yes, I know it is the same shit Facebook does every single day. But you see, that it's the fashion does not make it any less disgusting or any less idiotic, politically speaking. What's my point? My point is, we've been naive. We really believe this Web 2.0 thing, you know, sharing and building content together. For God's sake, we poured billions of man days into the platforms, and the platforms have amassed billions of dollars. But we were the only believers. Because the only business model the platforms ever had is to extract our data and resell it to whomever would pay for them. Don't believe those who will tell you that Google and Facebook have different business models. They're both into reselling personal data for targeted ads. That's it. In the information society, users are just data cows. But only if we let algo jerks and their masters have it their way. Because the truth is that algo jerks have a very limited perspective, and there are many alternatives to their trivial worldview. There are alternatives to their products and the miserably utilitarian vision of their masters. Of course, these alternatives require we are willing to act as thinking beings, not cows. But once we decide we are thinking being, we can leave a net that tries to turn us into kids craving a prize for the time and the value we're robbed of. We can leave software producers who are hell-bent on making pathological addicts out of us. And once we've left, we can rediscover things like responsibility, reflection, self-awareness. These are not concepts for a bovine mind. They require that we never stop learning. Maybe they require even a little effort. But this is the real continuing education of the real society of information. The one that enriches and empowers us. And not the one we are sold to make us feel one step too much behind or one step too much ahead to get paid. So, are you ready to stop being data cows? Because you know, if you're not worried by now, well, you're not paying attention. And if you, as many do, believe you have nothing to hide, it's just because you lack imagination, my friend. But luckily, not only another network is possible. It has always existed. And thankfully, it's growing. And it's a network where people use computers, not the other way around. Oh, and one more thing. I just finished typing the script when some piece of news popped up in my feed. It appears that new ghastly research by Steven Engelhard, Gunesh Sarkar, and Arvind Narayanan at the Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy unequivocally shows how the current web is used to record every single user activity from remote. Basically, it's like having a body camera on when we browse the web. All is recorded. Mouse movements, scrolling, the entire contents of pages, and of course, passwords. There is an entire industry already devoted to this. It's nothing really new, technically speaking, but the extent and the maturity of the commercial products they review is really worrying. And I have seen a few things in tech. Basically, we're witnessing full-fledged surveillance and monitoring application barely disguised as marketing intelligence. All this is, of course, just barely legal in Europe, and will be more so in May 2018 when the GDPR sets the record straight. But the fact that businesses have no qualms about developing and deploying this kind of technology, quite frankly, is revolting. I think we can at last agree that the state of the web now is a festering mire, and we must start acting, and act now. So, if deactivating JavaScript by default means that some site will not work, then be it. Marketers and their friends are building a dystopia just to make people click on ads. History will have a name for them, and it won't be a pretty one. You think I'm exaggerating? Well, install tracking blockers and script blockers on your browser now, and take just one day to assess the difference. The level of difficulty you will experience in navigating is a direct measure of the level of surveillance you're subject to. If you're cool with it, then it's your own lookout. But you have been warned. And that's a wrap for today. Data Nightmare is produced by Runtime Radio and is available on Spreaker, iTunes, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, and Player FM. A heartfelt thank you to Alex Racuglia and Simona Ortolani for their constant support and their contributions to this episode. You can find our RSS feeds and the info on how to support us on datanightmare.eu. Come say hello, and if you can, please pledge even just $1 a month on our Patreon. If you can't or won't, you can still help by letting your friends know you like this podcast. Thank you. This was Data Nightmare. The algorithmic is political. I am Walter Vanini. If you are listening, you are the resistance.